Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced in upstate New York for WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The San Jose Jazz Winterfest, Counterpoint with Ukraine is go, February 16th through March 3rd. The event is being co-curated by the MI Jazz Festival in Kiev, Ukraine. Artists include vocalist Jasmia Horn with the Marcus Shelby Orchestra, pianist Oren Evans, and the group George. For more information, sanjosejazz.org. The 20th anniversary of the Biamp Portland Jazz Festival in Portland, Oregon is this year, and it runs February 16th through the 25th. Scheduled performers include flutist Hubert Laws and his quintet, trumpeter Ambrose Akinmusiri with pianist Gerald Clayton, poet Moore Mother, and saxophonist Zoe Amba. For more information, pdxjazz.org. The Hudson Jazz Festival 2023 is titled The Shape of Jazz Today, scheduled over two weekends, February 16th through the 19th and February 23rd through the 26th, inside of Hudson Hall in Hudson, New York. Scheduled to perform are vocalists Sarah Elizabeth Charles and Michael Mayo, drummer Ulysses Owens Jr., and pianist Aaron Parks, with vocalist Samantha Rise. For more information, hudsonhall.org. At Elastic Arts in Chicago, Illinois, on February 9th, the Improvised Music Series presents tenor saxophonist Jarrett Hatcher, pianist Paul Giolorenzo, and drummer Julian Kirshner for the first set, and cellist Katinka Klenge and guitarist Bill McKay for the second set. For more information, elasticarts.org. At the Bop Stop, located in Cleveland, Ohio, trombonist and pianist Caleb Smith leads a sextet on February 9th, and on February 10th, bassist Darren Freight's group. For more information, themusicsettlement.org. Two events on February 10th at the University of Chicago in Chicago, Illinois. At Cafe Logan, saxophonist Armin Sangalang leads a quartet. And at the Logan Center Performance Hall, saxophonist Melissa Aldana will also lead a quartet. For more information, events.uchicago.edu. The duo of pianist Matthew Shipp and bassist Michael Bizio perform at the J.W. Marriott Essex House in New York City on February 10th. The Kohlstein Musician Relief Fund, in partnership with the Essex House for this performance, was created to address the current needs of musical artists whose incomes are being adversely impacted by COVID-19. For more information, bizio@earthlink.net. Pianist and composer Samora Pinderhughes and friends lead a multidisciplinary work that explores the daily realities of violence, incarceration, policing, and detention in U.S. communities on Friday, February 10th at Zankel Hall inside Carnegie Hall in New York City. For more information, carnegiehall.org. The Leap Day Trio, drummer Matt Wilson, saxophonist Jeff Lederer, and bassist Mimi Jones perform at the place they recorded their new release, Live at the Cafe Bohemia, February 10th and 11th in New York City. For more information, cafebohemianny.com. That same weekend in New York City, vocalist Diane Reeves performs her show Love is in the Air in the Rose Theater inside of Jazz at Lincoln Center. For more information, 2023.jazz.org. Vocalist Gregory Porter's annual Valentine's Day concert with special guest vocalist Jasmia Horn at King's Theater in Brooklyn, New York on Saturday, February 11th. For more information, kingstheater.com. Pianist and composer Emilio Tubel performs at the Green Room 42 in New York City on February 15th, celebrating his new release, Futuro. For more information, thegreenroom42.venuetix.com. Pianist James Francis and his trio with guitarist Kurt Rosenwinkel are at the Blue Note Jazz Club in New York City on February 13th. Also, the 2023 dual Grammy winner for Best New Artist and Best Jazz Vocal Album, Samara Joy, is there February 14th and 15th. For more information, BlueNoteJazz.com. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Jazz Club, February 14th through 18th, vocalist Catherine Russell. And inside of Birdland Theater, Frank Vignola's Guitar Night on Wednesday, February 15th. For more information, BirdlandJazz.com. And the Downtown Music Gallery's 32nd anniversary celebration continues with in-store performances in New York City. On Tuesday, February 14th, solo performances each by guitarists Stu Cutler and Gary Lucas. For more information, downtownmusicgallery.com. And now for new and upcoming releases. Drummer Joe Chambers' Dance Cobina on Blue Note. Pianist and accordionist Ben Rosenblum's A Thousand Pebbles on One Trick Dog. Pianist Satoko Fuji and multi-instrumentalist Otomo Yoshihide's Perpetual Motion on Ayler, and trumpetist Rachel Therium's Me Hogar on Outside in Music. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My interview is with trumpeter, composer, arranger, and educator Tony Cadlick. His new release with his big band is Sides, out on February 10th on Alternate Side Records. So, Tony, I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you, Cheryl. I appreciate being here.
Yeah. You brought your big band back into the studio to begin recording Sides in 2018 after a five-year hiatus. Why a hiatus, Tony?
As Maria Schneider told me once, starting a big band is maybe the least financially stable thing you can do. And it takes a tremendous amount of money to mount something like this, so I kind of had to wait and save my pennies and work up, you know. It didn't, that took a long time. And then, of course, when COVID hit, we were all out of work, so mixing it, mastering it, and doing all those things took an extraordinary amount of time. So that's why the delay, basically.
Yeah, the release is on trombonist Marshall Gilk's Alternate Side Records. He plays and solos on it. As an arranger, did he have any suggestions or input to Sides?
That's a great question. Actually, no. I mean, I've played in his ensemble as well, and it seems like several of us in the band have our own things, obviously, going on. But no, it's the arranging thing is very it's kind of personal. But we will ask each other questions like, "Hey, I noticed you did this. Why did you do that?" And blah blah blah, and we kind of learn from each other, certainly. And he'll send me things to listen to. Hey, check out this Vince Mendoza thing with WDR, and all, you know, we'll kind of throw things back and forth, but no, nothing specific in that way.
And you guys have crossed paths, it seems, throughout your career. You attended New England Conservatory. He teaches there now. You've both played in the Maria Schneider Orchestra. Wow.
Yeah, I think it's as big as New York is, it's kind of a small community in terms of musicians. I mean, there are so many of us, but you see these same folks popping up from time to time, and you just kind of form a bond with them. And for my money, Marshall is one of the top trombonists in the world today. And just to have him involved in any capacity, let alone playing or the record company, whatever, is a treat for me. And I'm honored to have had that moment. So.
Slides comes out on February 10th. The big band numbers approximately 42 people: brass, woodwinds, percussion, piano, guitar, bass, and strings. Did you arrange the music for each section?
I did, yeah. It's this one is none of my original compositions, but all of my arrangements. So why the band is so large is basically, and I did some of this in my first record as well, but I think New York is so, there's so many folks there. And I mean, I always say you could put together 75 big bands of completely different people and they would all be great. So one day we had one band, and then we did four tunes, and the next day we had another band and we did four tunes, and then a separate day we did the strings. So I think that's why it's so large, basically, is I just wanted to involve as many people as I could.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
It is. And I will say, once it's done, you don't really feel like doing it for a little while. Then we played at Birdland last Sunday, and there's so much work that goes into that. And just the logistics of trying to, you know, get 20 people in the same room. It's like herding cats, I say, once you hear them play, you know, the first thing I did when I came home that night from the gig was not go to sleep, but it was, I sat down at the piano and started writing again, because you're so inspired by listening to them. And that, I think that's kind of why we do it, for those goosebump moments when you, you know, when you get something that really inspires you.
The question of how do you write for yourself? Now, someone who's listening to this interview would probably say, well, I'm going to write what I can play, not what I can't. How do you work around writing what you can't play?
Wow, that's an excellent question. And I will say, with age, it, you know, there are certain things that are tougher. So you have more knowledge, of course, but then there are physical limitations. I can't do things at 58 that I could do at 21, of course. But I'm not really a high, loud, fast, intense type of person, and my music doesn't really portray that either, so I don't really run the risk of that. I guess I what I try to do is stay within the comfort zone of each instrument. Obviously I'm more adept at writing for saxophone and trombone and trumpet than I am with viola or cello or things like that, so I try to stay in the somewhat conservative area of those instruments until I get to know the limitations. Like I know Marshall, for example, as you mentioned, he's so talented. I can write things for him that I couldn't write for many other folks, just because I know his playing so well. And I know kind of what's in his wheelhouse. And, mm-hmm. But that is an excellent question. I guess I don't write outside of a certain box. And I will say that box is fairly large, but still it's, I try to stay within the confines of the instrument. And I ask players, hey, what's hard on piano? Is it hard to do this? What's hard on drums? Is it hard to do that? Because that's because those people, they do that every day. And for me, I'm kind of a novice with that, really.
Talk to us, Tony, about why you're so excited about Sides. For me, what lifts this release is the superb soloing and those swinging ensemble melodic lines.
Thank you. I think anytime you put so much time and thought and into something, and then you can have the computer kind of spit it back to you, and you can hear what the notes are, and oh, these chords are correct, and oh, this will work fine. But until you hear people like put their personality and their nuance into everything, it's just, you know, it's just slashes on it's black notes on white paper, basically. And until you see someone bring it to life and hear that, it's so incredible. And I guess that's why I'm excited. Selfishly, these are things that I've been living with for several years, and to hear people like really, really bring them to life. It's also a teaching moment for me. These saxes are going to be really struggling with this passage. And then they just whip through it. It's like, well, I guess that wasn't so hard. So next time maybe I'll stretch the boundaries a little further, but I'm excited just because I, as you say, the soloists and the ensemble, everyone is just playing so, so wonderfully. And it's just such a treat to have that. And especially after the pandemic, when we couldn't see each other in person and we couldn't play music together. I teach at Purchase College. And the first thing I did after after our hiatus was I went back and I taught, and I played in a little brass ensemble of students. And one of the students was missing, so I filled in for him. And I was playing this just seemingly mundane chorale, and I started crying, and I realized, wow, I've missed that so much in the last year and a half. And that emotion, I think we all needed a little reality check. And I don't think any musicians are going to take any of that for granted ever again after having that.
Well, I must say, Tony, your discography is impressive, and I'll just pick a few things. In 2021, you played on Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga's Love for Sale, and also the soundtrack to Tick, Tick, Boom. In 2020, Data Lords by the Maria Schneider Orchestra, and in 2018, the original soundtrack to Incredibles 2, which I loved, and Frozen, the Broadway musical, which I can leave right there on the table. But at this point in your career, does the work choose you, or do you choose the work?
Wow, that's another good question. The work, as a freelancer, the work always chooses you, I think. When you get to a certain point in your life, like when I have friends that are older, they're collecting their pensions, and they can kind of pick and choose what they want to do. They don't want to put themselves in any situation where they're not comfortable, or I think you're, when you hit a certain point, when you're 75 years old, you don't have to answer every time the phone rings, but everyone's in a different financial situation. And at 58, I know that I have to, you know, when they say jump, I say, oh, hi, because that's basically part of being a good, reliable sideman or sidewoman, is the fact that you're just able to turn it on whenever you need to. And that's, I think, in at least for me at this point in my life, the work always chooses you. And I don't take anything lightly, because New York, as I mentioned, is just filled with amazing players, and they could have anyone they want. And anytime they call me, I'm honored, and I try to, you know, jump through hoops to be there, of course.
And what's the most challenging work that you face now? Is it on Broadway, you know, in a pit band, or is it playing at, say, Birdland?
Well, Broadway, what it has is predictability. You know what you're getting every night. You know what time you're showing up. You know what time you're leaving. You know what you're going to play. So seemingly that's easy. But what I will say is that over, you know, I did Beauty and the Beast for 10 years. And I don't think humans are made to hear the same music 8 times a week, let alone 10 years. It's just, but there's a way to think about that, in that the ticket buyers, they're likely seeing it for the first time, and you have to kind of turn it on and make it happen every night. And it's got to be as good as it was the night before. And so there's an art to that, I think. But I guess what the biggest challenge was the question. So I'm going to say certain situations, like when I was young, I just would play and big deal. You know, I just kind of played with reckless abandon. And as you get older, the stakes seem to get higher. You would think it would be the opposite, but for a lot of folks, I know it's not. It gets more difficult. And as a brass player, physically, it's just harder to play now than it was 40 years ago. But so I just trying to stay in shape and stay on top of the game is maybe my biggest challenge. And the amount of practicing I need to do now is way more than what I did 30 years ago, which is hard. So I think just knowing that it's going to come out and be cool is the hardest thing for me, no matter what it is, whether it's my show, whether it's a recording session, it just doesn't matter. But it just, time is not in your favor as a musician, physically anyway.
Yeah. So you put a lot of miles on that trumpet. When you're in New York, where do you go to get it repaired?
Well, I'm a Yamaha artist, so I don't make a move without them. And they have a shop on 54th Street. They're incredibly busy because they're so good. But a guy named Wayne Tanabe is a master craftsman. And I go to him. I try to, and he's hard to get to because sometimes he's very busy. But I'm a through and through, I'm a Yamaha person. And in fact, I just bought a new instrument yesterday for the first time in about 20 years.
Ooh.
So I'm excited. I played it last night at the show. It was very exciting. So I'm still in the what they call the honeymoon period. Like, I'm waiting for another shoe to drop. I will say, in New York City, you would think there would be tons of repair folks, but there really aren't. There's not a lot.
No, not like when we were younger as musicians.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So what happens on the road? You know, a dent, a ding, a piston pops out. What do you do? Have you become your own repairman on the road?
Wow, these are really excellent questions. Thank you. I'm not. Though generally, if you're traveling with other folks who play your instrument, someone's got a quick fix. Whether it's could be as simple as a rubber band holding your water key in place or whatever. I mean, there's always little tricks, but you just, first of all, you buy the best and most protective case you can buy, and you're as careful as you can possibly be. When you set it on a stand, you make sure the stand is secure. These are all seemingly mundane things, but it's true. If you have good things to protect your instrument, you're in better shape. I had a student, and she was in Italy for the summer, And she texted me. She was panicked. She's like, I dropped my trumpet. The third valve's not coming up. What do I do? I'm an hour outside of Torino. I don't have a car. And I said, Beck, I don't know what to say. I'm so sorry. But, you know, she went into town and she found someone, and she made it work. And it's like, well, I guess you just, you know, the network is so huge that you just you just seek out who you need to seek out. Yep. But that's a great question. I don't have any chops in terms of fixing my own
stuff. Ah, Tony. So as we come to the end of this interview, I'd like to give you the last word, your upcoming projects. I know you've got gigs coming up because you're so busy.
You know, it varies day to day. It's such a weird life, but I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it's very up and down. The Broadway show is kind of my bread and butter, and I play MJ on Broadway, which is really great. I play Michael Jackson's music every night is wonderful. Maria Schneider has a little tour coming up. They're doing the West Coast. I'm not doing that portion, but then we're doing some Midwest dates in March. Play with the New York Pops. They have a concert series at Carnegie Hall, and that's super fun. And I'm just, you know, gun for hire, basically. Whatever they call for, I'll say yes and show up with a smile and try to do my best. That's kind of the musician's thing. You know, you just go where you're needed. We did have a concert at Birdland, and I'm going to post some clips online because it was, the band played beautifully last Sunday, and it was an honor to, I played at Birdland hundreds of times, but it was my first time as a leader, so it was really exciting.
That was my interview with trumpeter Tony Cadlec. For more information, tonycadlec.com. Listening to Situation Fluxus. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com. And now for music.
Thank you.
player, composer, and band leader, Jeremy Rose and the Airshift Orchestra, featuring percussionists Simon Barker and Chloe Kim, from their Airshift Records release of last year, Disruption, The Voice of Drums. We're listening to, in the background, Mirage Returns. Composer and band leader Marilyn Mazur, from her 2022 Clap Your Hands release, Rerouting, we heard Largo of Voices, written by the vocal soloist Josephine Kronholm. Hildegund Osef was the trumpet soloist. And we began the set with the composition Perpetual Motion 3 from two revered Japanese avant-garde artists, pianist Satoko Fuji and guitarist and multi-instrumentalist Otomo Yoshihide, from their release Perpetual Motion, due out on February 9th on Ayler Records. And time for one more. Saxophonist Steve Wilson celebrates a birth date on February 9th. We'll hear a selection from bassist Christian McBride's 2021 Mack Avenue release, Live at the Village Vanguard, with his ensemble, Inside Straight. This is the companion album to his 2015 record of the same name. The composition we'll hear was written by Wilson, Ms. Angelou. Wilson on soprano saxophone, Peter Martin on piano, Warren Wolf on vibraphone, McBride on bass, and Carl Allen on drums.
We are going to continue with a song written by Mr. Steve Wilson. The name of this song, it gives you a musical portrait of someone who was just so dignified and classy and had such power and wisdom in her words, the great Maya Angelou. And this is such a beautiful musical portrait of her. It is simply titled Ms. Angelou. Steve Wilson, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next week for another show. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.
The preceding show was recorded at Wavefarms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State. The preceding show was recorded at Wavefarms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.